Good morning, Your Honor. Your Honors. My name is Halmut Kha. I represent the appellant Eric Webster in this case. And the issue here
Would you like to reserve any time for rebuttal?
I'll reserve 2 minutes.
2 minutes?
Yeah.
Very well. Thank you.
This case, from our perspective, is primarily an issue of statutory construction of the legislature's change in 1989 of the last paragraph of RCW 7420A220. Prior to 1989, that paragraph of 7420A220 included the phrase, it read, "The responsible parent owing a support debt may execute a written extension or waiver of any statute, including but not limited to RCW 456210, which may bar or impair the collection of the debt, and the extension or waiver shall be effective according to its terms." The 1989 amendments to 7420A220, eliminated the phrase "including but not limited to RCW 456210," and
but it does say "of any statute which may bar or impair the collection of the debt."
It does say that.
How could you make it any broader than that?
Well, this amendment was not made in a vacuum, because in 1989, the legislature not only amended this statute, but it also amended RCW 617, 020, adding subsection 3, and it also amended 617-020, adding subsection 2, and it amended 456210, adding subsection 2, which didn't exist before 1989. And prior to these amendments that were made in 1989, the statute of limitations on child support arrears was 10 years, as any other judgment. Not too long before that statute was changed to 10 years, it had been 6 years. But in 1989, the legislature increased the statute of limitations on collection of child support to 10 years after the 18th birthday of the youngest child named in the applicable order for support. That was a substantial increase in the statute of limitations duration. So at the same time that the legislature increased the duration of the statute of limitations on child support collections, it removed this particular phrase from RCW 7420A220. And the legislature, I submit, did so with the language of 456210 in mind, which provides that in subsection 1, that after the expiration of 10 years from the date of entry of any judgment heretofore or hereafter rendered in this state, it shall cease to be a lien or charge against the estate or person of the judgment debtor. Next sentence states, no suit, action, or other proceeding shall ever be had on any judgment rendered in this state by which the lien shall be extended or continued in force for any greater or longer period than 10 years. That's a fairly clear assertion of policy that once a judgment expires per 456210, no action can be taken to enforce that judgment. 456210 is not a statute of limitations. It's a statute of non-claim, ultimate repose. The case law we cited in the appellant's brief, Hazel versus Van Beek, states that 456210 eliminates the court's jurisdiction to enforce the judgments to which it applies. In 456...
Why wouldn't that still, even with that characterization, why wouldn't that still fall within the 1989 version of 7420A220 as a statute which may bar or impair, if you've evaporated the entire judgment lien, isn't that a statute that impairs collection? Can't you waive it?
Well, 456210 doesn't impair collections. It terminates the judgment as a lien upon the debtor or upon the debtor's estate. When the judgment no longer exists, there's no longer anything to collect. 456210 is not a statute of limitations. It's not a remedy statute. It's a statute that terminates the life of the judgment that prior to the expiration of the time limit specified in that statute could be collected. And these amendments occurred in 1989. Hazel versus Van Beek was decided in 1998. Grubb versus Vogel's Garage and the Kruger case were also decided after this amendment. And each of these cases state that 456210 is not a mere statute of limitations. And in fact, in a recent case decided by the Washington Supreme Court, In Re Paternity of MH, cited on page 12 of the appellant's brief, the Washington Supreme Court confirmed that characterization of 456210 as not being a statute of limitations, but rather a statute that eliminates the judgment, the life of the judgment.
But then it goes on to say, for purposes of the Uniform Collection Act, you can, it falls within the phrase statute of limitations for purposes of that statute.
Well, you know, I don't really read the In Re MH case, paternity of MH case, to say that, but that case was decided in the unique context of whether or not Washington's statute 456210 that terminates the life of a judgment trumps Indiana's longer statute of limitations on collection of child support. And for purposes of that analysis, the Supreme Court treated 456210 as a statute that governs duration of the ability to enforce the judgment. And in the context of the Uniform Interstate Family Support Act, that characterization allowed the court to say that the longer Indiana statute of limitations on child support would apply. Thank you.
You have your rebuttal time.
May it please the court, my name is Leanne Malloy, and I'm appearing on behalf of the Department of Social and Health Services today. It is undisputed that the appellant agreed to waive the statute of limitations to obtain a lower payment rate on his back support. Now that he's benefited from the lower payment rate and the time period for enforcing his obligation would have expired, but for the waiver, he argues that it does not apply to RCW 4.56210 because it is a non-claim statute rather than a statute of limitations. DSHS disagrees. I will explain that the appellant was authorized to waive the time bar in the non-claim statute and that his waiver applies to that statute.
I guess one view of his argument is that it's not a time bar. It is a statute that says the judgment and judgment lien expire or terminated, no longer in existence. That's not a bar or impairment of ability to collect. It's elimination of a judgment. That's different.
If eliminating the debt is not an impairment to collection, I don't know what would be an impairment. It's a more thorough impairment than just stopping the time. The whole reason that we're here today is because the appellant is arguing that we should not be able to collect his back child support obligation, and that is a bar or an impairment. The statutory scheme shows that the appellant is able to waive the time limit in RCW 4.56210. When the court engages in statutory analysis, its goal is to identify and effectuate legislative intent by looking at statutes that relate to the same subject together and harmonizing them. Here, RCW 4.56210 limits, along with a couple other statutes, limits the time that a child support obligation can be enforced or perhaps exist to when the youngest child named in the order turns 28. But RCW 74.20A220 permits a parent to waive any statute that bars or impairs the collection of a child support debt. Here, both statutes can easily be harmonized by holding that the waiver provision provides an exception to the bar to enforcement or the existence of the debt in the non-claim statute. This plain language construction is supported by the legislative history of the waiver provision. The waiver provision was part of DSHS request legislation that was proposed as a way to make it create more flexibility when they negotiate with a parent who is in difficult financial circumstances. If a parent is willing to sign a waiver, DSHS can agree to collect a nominal amount on the arrears or perhaps no amount at all without concern that they are jeopardizing their ability to collect the debt in full by the time limit. This provision doesn't make any sense, wouldn't accomplish its purpose unless it applied to all bars to collection. It would do no good for it to apply to the two other statutes and not apply to the non-claim statute. It would be a piece of legislation that accomplishes nothing. The waiver signed by the appellant applies to the non-claim statute. The cardinal rule for construing the waiver is discerning the intent of the parties as evidenced by the wording of the waiver and its purpose. The waiver explains that it limits the length of time that child support can be enforced, and it specifically identifies RCW 4.56210 as one of the statutes that is being waived. There would be no reason to list this statute in the waiver unless the parties intended for the waiver to apply to it. The waiver goes on to state that it waives the any statute in this state or another state that
any,
limits.
Doesn't it say any other, the paragraph 3 of the waiver says any other statute. So that phrase can't
okay.
have any.
Any other statute, that is correct, Your Honor.
So that has no application to 4.56210.
Right. Yes, Your Honor.
So then, and then the first phrase, I guess the argument the other going the other direction is, well, when you say it bars statute of limitations defenses under da-da-da-da-da, including this statute, that you're stuck with, is this a statute of limitations defense or is this not? Is this a statute of repose that's completely different? So is the language inartful in the waiver form? Does that open the door for this argument, my intent's uncertain or confused? Or
when the court looks at the purpose of the waiver, which was to achieve a lower payment rate on the arrears, the language in the waiver as a whole, it is clear that the intent of the waiver was to extend the time period for enforcement.
Because of the lower payment.
Because of the lower payment. The appellant relies on a hyper-technical definition of the term non-claim statute to avoid the consequences of the waiver. And while, as the court knows, there's a distinction between a non-claim statute and a statute of limitation, this distinction is not observed in ordinary conversation. It's not understood by non-attorneys, and it's probably not understood by a lot of attorneys. If you look at the dictionary definition of statute of limitations, it's defined as a statute assigning a time after which rights can no longer be enforced. This is broad enough to include a non-claim statute. Black's Legal Dictionary's first definition of non-claim statute is statute of limitations. The definition of statute of limitations in the waiver, which was defined as something that limits the length of time a person can collect a judgment, is consistent with these definitions and is broad enough to include a non-claim statute. Other courts have recognized that statute of limitations is sometimes used to include a non-claim statute. And as discussed during appellant's argument in Paternity of M.H., the court determined that while RCW 4.56210 is technically a non-claim statute, for purposes of the Uniform Interstate Family Support Act, it is a statute of limitations. The United States Supreme Court in CTS Corp. observed that United States Congress sometimes uses statute of limitations to refer to a non-claim statute, and therefore it is necessary to look at congressional intent and not just rely on the wording used by Congress. And that's what I'm asking the court to do here. Look at the purpose of the waiver, the language, and conclude that the statute of limitations includes a non-claim statute. The appellant was statutorily authorized to waive the time limit in RCW 4.56210, and he did so, and he should be held to the terms of that waiver. That concludes my argument, unless the court has questions.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Can I have 30 seconds left?
You have 2 minutes, according to my count.
Oh, okay. Either way.
You can take 30 seconds if you want.
I'll take 2 minutes. Thank you. Well, again, it's very important in deciding or analyzing this situation to look at all four statutes that are at issue. There's RCW 41620, 617, 020, and 456210, and 7428220. The first three statutes all have that language that refers to the time limit of 10 years after the youngest child's 18th birthday. 416020 is the statute of limitations. 617020 is the remedy statute. The remedy statute provides that these remedies are available until 10 years after the youngest child's 18th birthday. 456210 is not a remedy statute. It's not a statute of limitations. I mean, if 456210 was a statute of limitations, why do we have the same limitation language in 416020? Now, 456210 is a statute that terminates the life of the judgment. The legislature clearly intended, when it added subsection 2 to 456210, to treat judgments for accrued child support the same way as any other judgment that's barred under 456210. Subsection 2 of 456210 is brand new, newly enacted in 1989. And it coincides with the elimination of that phrase, including but not limited to RCW 456210 in 1989 from 7428220. And I submit that that's a clear legislative expression of the intent to preclude waiver beyond the limitations specified in that statute.
Thank you, counsel. The next matter is Oak Harbor.